Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Nerds Be Heard podcast. Charlie and I are back and better than ever. We're both a year older. We share a birthday week every week or every birthday of the year. We're one day apart from one another. So happy belated birthday, Charlie.
Same to you, Matt.
We're getting old, fellow nerds.
Yes, we are.
Old. But our minds stay young, our hearts stay young, and our enthusiasm for all things nerd stay as youthful as ever. Lots of stuff happening. As always, the airwaves, the interwebs, just busting at the seams with nerd data that has kept us super excited over the last couple of weeks. As we've ventured past the Falcon and the Winter Soldier into new territory as we await the next big live action Disney Plus show, Loki, which is here in the next 3 weeks. So what's been getting you excited these days, Charlie?
Well, besides the Bad Batch, which I know I'll do a little brief talk about later, because we probably won't be doing episode by episode like we did for Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
We'll do them in batches.
Yes, we will. The thing that's excited me the most, though, this week actually has been the big news that AT&T has sold off Warner Media to Discovery. So they're going to create a big media company to really go head to head with Disney and Netflix. And the thing that excites me about that is I think that's going to make DC films way better. I think it's going to be new leadership. There's already rumors. Will Zack Snyder now come back to do some stuff? He's actually been doing a lot of press for his new Netflix movie, Army of the Dead, and he's not shy anymore, basically saying how much Warner Brothers hates his guts and he doesn't really like them either. So I think they kind of just did the Snyder cut to appease the fans, to basically just to get numbers for HBO Max. I think it's weird they haven't really announced what the numbers have been for that. It's because I do believe it was a success. They're trying to pretend that it wasn't, and that's why they weren't going to continue. But luckily now all that's probably going to be in the past, because most of the leadership for this new company are going to be the folks that were over at Discovery. I'm sure there's going to be all. And the new CEO has come out and said IP is his most important investment going forward. Actually, you'd appreciate this. When he was being interviewed, I think by CNN, he started off saying the biggest IPs that they now have are Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. And then he said Entourage and Sex and the City, which some people were kind of like, I don't think Entourage and Sex and the City are in the same wheelhouse as DC. Cause then after that, he said end Game of Thrones. But that makes me feel like Entourage is going to come back in some sort.
Well, so interestingly enough, I'm going to shout out another podcast called Victory, the podcast, which is a great trip down memory lane for Entourage fans. And I don't know if you've heard about it, Charlie. We actually haven't spoken about this directly, but hosted by Kevin Connolly. He started a media company, particularly for podcasts. And then Doug Ellen, who's the creator of Entourage, and Kevin Dillon, who Victory, everybody's favorite Entourage character. So a great podcast, an amazing trip down memory lane. If you're a fan of Entourage, head on over at Victory the podcast and check that out. But what it's done is create a new it's brought back the nostalgia for Entourage, but it's also created a new fan base in some of the younger generations that might not have ever watched Entourage when it was airing. And now that it's available in HBO Max, they're basically through social media, through the popularity, it's one of the number one ranked podcasts in the TV genre on iTunes and other platforms, and it's generating a buzz, and it's getting people re-excited about the show Entourage. And what they've really done is they've brought it to the 21st century, if you will, or to these 2010, 2020 era of, you know, it was getting a lot of backlash for a while. It was kind of saying it was a misogynistic show and that, you know, it didn't have enough powerful female characters, but they've actually, a ton of their guests have been the female powerful characters that actually were on the show, and they kind of deep dive into it and how it really isn't as bad as some of the hate's been, and kind of talk about how it was kind of grounded in a certain, it's like a time capsule of a certain time, and that it could really survive coming back with a little bit more of a different approach and facing very real post-Harvey Weinstein kind of Hollywood.
I was just about to bring that up. I think that would make a great show. Not to cut you off, but that lends perfectly in for Entourage, because it's kind of funny you bringing all of this about. I need to listen to this podcast because I haven't, but the creator of Entourage has come out and said HBO Max, well, AT&T at the time, Warner Media, they've buried Entourage on HBO Max.
Yeah,
and I didn't think of it. Yeah, it's oh, wait, what? Wait, what?
You type ENT in the search bar in HBO Max and it doesn't come up, but Curb Your Enthusiasm does.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. I mean, even though I'm a huge Curb fan, I love Entourage. I get where some of the criticism can come from, but it's from a different time. And I know people say, well, that doesn't mean it was right then, but I mean, I look at entertainment value a lot different than I do stuff in real life. And if people can't, sometimes people can't distinguish the two. And I mean, yeah, that show definitely did have a, you know, a certain demographic, but it, at the time it was pretty popular and both men and women loved the show.
I've actually seen equal amounts of people that love the show, and Ari Gold, one of the characters, for those listening that don't know, he plays like a super agent, Hollywood super agent, and he's an equal opportunity offender. He offends everybody, and it makes for some great comedy. No one expects that to be reality. It's just comedic relief. But they actually, you'll love the podcast because they're very honest about it and they're self-reflecting. The creator seems to be almost not defensive, but kind of, hey, like, check out this perspective. And this is what we were thinking when the show came out. And this is the situation back in time. And it makes you remember. So I started rewatching Entourage because of this podcast and what they said. It makes you remember, like, that show was ahead of its time too in like the comic book world. Like, before comic book movies were as big, it was just Spider-Man at the time. They had the Aquaman coming out. The whole Comic-Con scene, it kind of put the spotlight on that before Comic-Con was this huge.
I like wanted that movie to be real so bad with like James Cameron making Aquaman. To me, that'd be a perfect movie.
And with that one scene that they shot where it's like Vincent Chase running
down the like, yeah, and it's amazing.
Diving into a tsunami, like, so cool. And they actually got James Cameron on the show to do multiple cameos pretending he's directing.
Yeah, they got a lot of celebrities to be on that show, like as if they were playing exaggerated versions of themselves. I mean, I was obsessed with that show when it was on.
Yeah, and ahead of its time on the trend of this kind of couple things, you know, how the superhero genre became huge, the nostalgia, like with Johnny Drama, everyone was talking about Viking Quest, right? And it's like same type of thing. We have this, like, in an age where everyone's quarantined, stuck at home, and there's streaming services, now you have this nostalgia of old content that people are re-watching and emerging. And so anyway, I think great example. I'm glad he mentioned Entourage. It was trending on Twitter, I think, a couple of weeks ago, and it might come back. So
yeah, I mean, I don't see how that he wouldn't have name dropped that if I don't think there's plans in the works, because Sex and the City is coming back. Yep. That's official. So
another
I think Entourage is definitely coming back.
Yeah, and this the announcement of the merger is exciting in many ways. To your point, we started to see with HBO Max, right, starting to take on most of the DC content. You could see that they're trying to follow suit on Disney and all of Disney's trends, yeah. Disney Plus. I think both of us were skeptical. I actually talked about this in this seminar that I was at, about can people follow. So everyone says, all right, whoever's first is the best when it comes to penetrating territory. So if you were to compare like Amazon Prime to Netflix and HBO Max and Disney Plus, the argument was, well, Netflix will always reign supreme. And there was one side of the room, I'm raising my hand, which is actually nobody thought Disney Plus could even take any type of market share from Netflix. But look at what they've done. They've actually taken an existing product or service and made it better and created this sense of urgency around exclusivity, right? They have the exclusive content related to some of these huge franchises that they have the licensing to, including Lucasfilm, so Star Wars, all the Disney shows, all the MCU. And regardless, you're almost at a point now where there's, you know, if you are a Netflix fan, you're not going to say no to Disney Plus. So now we're almost reinventing cable. You have these bundles.
It's exactly what we're doing. Yeah, it's insane. So everyone who, you know, was done with cable, cutting the cord, if you want to see all the good shows, you need to get subscribed to all these streaming services. And, you know, if it, for certain people, if it does come down to the money, you are bundling these all up anyway, and it's going to be around the same price as cable anyway. Because at the end of the day, most of the good shows at this point that people are talking about, the quote unquote water cooler shows, are on a streaming service. Like broadcasts and cable, while they're still great shows, they're not necessarily the ones that people are talking about anymore. There's a lot of restrictions on what can be shown on those types of networks versus on these streaming services. And the money is in another league. And kind of going back to the thing with Disney Plus, is basically all of their originals at this point are must-see shows. Where Netflix, hey, they have the Stranger Things of the world. I mean, they have big shows. I'm a huge Cobra Kai fan. I was happy when that went over to Netflix. But they pump out so much content. A lot of that stuff gets, you know, they have great algorithms where it gets pulled up, you know, all of the, you know, top watch shows, but it's just not the same. They are more about quantity over quality, where weirdly enough, I think Disney can hit both of them, where they're going to have the quality and the quantity at the same time.
Yeah. And it's, this isn't the only, this was an announcement this week, but then there was this speculation now of, was it Amazon buying MGM?
Yes.
So, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that's going to happen. MGM's been up for sale for quite some time. They've been trying to be bought out. It's just their asking price has been ridiculous for the bigger media companies of the world. I think Amazon's a perfect partner because they don't want to fall behind. And by buying, I mean, they obviously have the money. And once they buy that company, they're going to get a lot of IP, a lot of movies and stuff that they can then start pumping up on Amazon Prime. I think that's going to happen.
And so that's the point, right? I think that what Disney has done is created an urgency in the market where it was like Netflix set the trend and everyone's like, okay, we're going to try to like at least emulate that. But then Disney changed the game and it's like, okay, well, we're going to pull all our content. We're going to completely create an exclusive service that you have to pay us through, which is smart business. Shout out to Bob Iger, who's one of the best CEOs in the history of media. Now there's this urgency in the market to get IP, to get that exclusive content, to keep people interested and tuning in and signing up. And yeah, some genius is now going to say, well, let's bundle this all together and call it like the streaming cable. It's going to be basically, we're going to go back to the cable days, but honestly, somehow somebody needs to do that. I'm giving you guys a business idea. It doesn't have to be that far outside the box. Bundle some stuff, put it with a cable provider, and call it something else, and someone's going to call you a genius. You're going to be a multi-billionaire. So somebody will do it. Someone's probably already working on that. So but right now, even like if you get TVs, right, a TV will have smart TV built in. Some of those platforms will only have certain applications available for it. They're also creating this kind of monopoly of, I'm only letting you watch this. Then you got to go get a Roku or hook up your Xbox One. And it becomes almost a hassle to have all your content. You got, you know, four different HDMIs and all these different inputs to get all the content.
And that's a business in itself. I mean, I just know from what I do for a living, I mean, there are people's jobs who are to get those services on all those other different platforms. And if they don't want to, you know, come to an agreement, they'll say, hey, HBO Max is not going to be on Amazon Fire because you're not giving us what we want. And then ultimately they need to strike the deal, because then people will leave that platform and go to the Apple TVs or the Rokus of the world. So, I mean, that's another huge business in itself. I mean, it's really, the streaming wars are real.
Yeah. So yeah, lots of that kind of, this trend to merge ideas, merge, businesses and merge, content in a way that keeps people coming back. Also in the news that I wanted to talk about, and, I'm going to throw a left hook at you because you're not ready for this one.
Okay.
But since we are the, podcast that celebrates all things fantasy, have you been seeing the news? I mean, we've all seen the news over the last couple of years, but have you seen the latest, the Jeremy Corbell kind of release of more footage of unidentified aerial phenomena, otherwise known as UFOs? Have you seen any of this news and all the Pentagon confirmations and things like that? Do you think that Thanos has arrived on Earth? Do you think that we've been visited and are being visited on a more frequent basis? I have my thoughts, but I wanted to see what your thoughts were.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard of this. I haven't followed it, you know, that extensively, but I mean, I think there could be some truth to this. I mean, I'm not going to, there's got to be other forms of life other than us on Earth. I think people exist. I mean, I don't think it's what we see in the movies and whatnot, but I don't necessarily believe in the whole UFO stuff. No.
Yeah.
If I'm being cut and dry about that, but there's definitely, I think, other forms, which I know is off topic a little bit. There's definitely other life forms out there, whether they're just some sort of matter or whatnot. They don't need to look like us, but I don't think they look like the aliens we see in television and movies.
So when you see this stuff on the news getting confirmed by the Pentagon, where US military have identified aircraft that are not being using a propulsion that is known to mankind, at least not to the US government at this point in time, that defies everything we know about science. Do you think that it's just, hey, maybe Russia or China has developed some sort of technology that's just way in advance of even what we thought we would be in the next century? And that maybe we've got some threats just internal to human race?
I mean, I want to be inclined to say yes to that, but I mean, you never know. It's one of those things, like people can think you're crazy if you think there's other forms of life. And then, you know, if you don't want to believe it, you know, you don't want to be that person who one day, oh, what, I wish I believed in it. It's
I need you to be more passionate about this, Charlie. We are guys that look.
No, I know. It's just.
We are men that go to the movies watching these interstellar movies about galaxies far away. We look at Star-Lord, the guy.
I want it to be real, I guess, but it's I mean, what do you think?
Personally, I think that the government is a lot more methodical than we, some people give them credit for. Other people are way too extreme and think that the government controls everything in the world and your brain and all this stuff. And they're just absurd. But like, when you look at like, you know, some of the leaks that have happened over the last decade, who's the guy that, you know, told everyone that they were tracking our cell phones at all times, and Snowden. Edward Snowden. And then you look at over the last 3-4 years, they've slowly released these, and they're never headlines. They're like kind of in the media, they're like kind of 4 or 5 articles down, but it's like, yeah, some sort of aircraft that defies physics was able to move at speeds that are greater than the speed of light, was able to go from way up high in the sky down into water, disappear, then come back up and mess with radar and do all this stuff. And you start to see that and you're like, okay, like maybe it's just a coincidence, or maybe there was like a bug stuck in the radar and just messing with them. But then it's like, okay, now you've got like respected pilots coming out and saying like, I was there, I witnessed it, I saw this craft with my own 2 eyes, it was outside of anything that's logical.
And that's what brings me, I want you to continue, but that is the best evidence of wanting to believe in it, when you hear people like that say they saw something,
right? And then you go back and then you think about like Bob Lazar and everything that happened with that guy and everything that's been proven. It's like, well, maybe he isn't crazy. Bob Lazar, for those that don't know, look him up, was this guy that supposedly worked at Area 51 decades ago, was able to, according to him, explore extraterrestrial aircraft and the technology behind it. And what he said 30, 40 years ago, in terms of the technology that he was witnessing and anti-gravity propulsion, is what we're seeing actually being spectated by US Air Force personnel. And so then it's like, okay, well, how does that two connect? And we have evidence of it via video footage, and that's only the evidence they're showing us that they're unclassifying. To me, there's there's some sort of methodology here where the government will slowly declassify things to ease people in, because they don't want to have another toilet paper fiasco. You got to ease the American public into this insane knowledge before you go in. And so they've been pressing previous President Obama actually multiple times on kind of live television shows and things like that. And he always kind of like, oh, there's nothing. He laughs it off. Same thing with Trump. But then on the Late Late Show last night or 2 nights ago, Obama was pressed again. Like, is there anything, you know, that you know, related to, you know, extraterrestrials, UFOs, things like that? And he finally said, there are things that I'm aware of that I would never be allowed to tell you publicly. And so then everyone's like, what the heck does that mean? Right. So, and it just got me excited. I'm a nerd, right? I get excited and I'm like,
well, I haven't, though, if I'm being honest, I haven't looked into this enough. Like, I saw the quick blurbs, but I haven't read enough about what is being said or even about what like Obama was saying. So I think I need to read up on it a little bit more, but I have heard that they say that there was a video footage leaked, right? Correct. Where, suppose there is that UFO.
Yeah, well, multiple. There's the one from a couple of years ago called the Tic Tac and defied logic.
But just recently, right?
But then this week, yeah, there's a release that actually went and submerged itself in water off the coast of San Diego, which is like the hub for all things fighter pilot and testing and all that stuff. I've got a few friend fighter pilots actually that fly off the coast of San Diego regularly. And Tom Cruise flies off the coast of San Diego in anticipation of Top Gun, which we need to talk about Tom Cruise. Actually, this is a perfect segue. We're going to go with aliens, to the alien on Earth, the the human of all humans, the meta-human, Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise over the last couple of weeks is, I don't know if he's planting it or whatever it is, everybody's coming out and talking about. So there was an article on the new Mission Impossible. The new Top Gun is coming out. They did a celebration of the 25th anniversary of the original Top Gun. There's now Top Gun Day. But this dude, all right, this gentleman, this radical human being, for those of you that don't know, Tom Cruise is notorious for doing his own stunts, practical stunts. He goes through months, sometimes years of training. And the latest Top Gun, he actually flies an F-18 fighter jet.
Unreal.
He flew the helicopter in the latest Mission Impossible. He has scaled the side of buildings.
He's the only actor who gets older and does more ridiculous stunts as he gets older, where most people would like start cutting it down. And, you know, he's so famous. Not many people of his caliber either. I know we've talked in the past, we gush over Tom Cruise, but the guy does stuff that no one of his caliber would ever do. And I hate that he gets so much crap. Like, you know what? You don't want to like the guy personally, but that shouldn't affect you going to enjoy his movies. Like, he is still the epitome of a movie star, and what he does puts people in seats because it's just so entertaining.
Yeah. And it's actually, it's funny because part of the marketing is like, hey, look at this crazy stunt that Tom Cruise did. And right. And a lot of people that aren't as big of movie buffs and nerds as we are, don't actually watch all those feature ads and get them some type of movie. So a lot of people don't like know that. I find myself every time I'm watching Mission Impossible, like, because I watch that series all the time. Actually, the last three, I think, were like their own space of action movie. They almost separate themselves from the first few, but I'm always watching them and I love them. And like my wife, she'll come in, she'll watch it, and then I'll start kind of going on and on, like, do you see that? You think that's a stunt double? You think that's green screen? It's not. That's Tom Cruise on the side of a freaking plane holding on, his face moving.
One of the greatest stunts ever. I mean, I'm totally in the same boat because I'm definitely, I know we've said in the past too, we're big Mission Impossible fans. And I feel like at this point, you either like those movies or you don't. I know when new ones come out, I try to, whether it's my friends or colleagues, try to pump them up like, hey, you need to see this movie. Like, it is probably going to be the new best action movie out there. And yeah, everyone thinks his stunts are fake unless you watch the featurettes or you know Tom Cruise. And it's that's how crazy they are. They're like not believable. It's almost not believable that Paramount lets him do these stunts. Like, it's crazy. I mean, he's been hurt before and it's had to delay the film.
He broke his leg on that. He jumped from one building to the next in the latest Mission Impossible and shut down production for several weeks and then had to limp around. And by the way, he finished the scene. With a freaking broken leg because he's a freaking legend. The only guy that compares to Tom Cruise in terms of ultimate legend, living legend, in terms of action, in terms of doing your own stunts, is Keanu Reeves.
Yes.
But he's not on the same level.
He's not at the same level. Maybe he'll get there one day, but he's like, if people want to say Tom Cruise is done, which he's not, Keanu Reeves is like the new guy who you can expect to maybe do some crazy stunt. But I still, they're not in the same league for me. I don't think he'll ever get there.
Well, yeah, one hangs off the side of airplanes. The other one does just like full on driving stunts and fist fights in the John Wick.
He does stuff that, you know, for other actors may be pushing the limits, but it's nothing that a stuntman wouldn't do. He just does it himself. There are professional stunt people who would never do what Tom Cruise is doing. That's what makes it insane.
Well, did you read about the new stunt? So every movie, just again to recap, every movie there's at least one major, every Mission Impossible movie, there's at least one major stunt that Tom Cruise has signed up for that is something that's never been done in the history of movie making and often has never been done just by a human being ever. It's some sort of extreme activity, stunt, action sequence. In Ghost Protocol, it was scaling the side of a building in Abu Dhabi. The follow up to that, it was hanging off the side of an airplane as it took off, and he's literally just held on by like a steel cable. In the Fallout, it was jumping out of an airplane right underneath the stratosphere, so it was one of the highest jumps. Well, it was definitely the highest jump in a recorded movie history. But one of the highest jumps like a skydiver's ever done. And zero oxygen, zero gravity, and jumps off a plane and films the whole thing. And they actually, the only other time they've done this in a movie was in the original Point Break, where they have a single shot. You can't watch the cut because they don't cut. Where someone or an object falls out of the plane or the camera itself as the actor. One was Patrick Swayze, who did his own stunt, one of his own stunts, Point Break, who's also one of the biggest legends of all time. And then this one with Tom Cruise, who literally jumped out from the frickin' stratosphere, and it does not cut. And he's flying at obscene speeds, and he acts, and it's through the clouds. The only after effect that they added was a lightning strike, that obviously you're not going to have him get hit by lightning, actually. But this one, so this next Mission Impossible, which is what, the
seventh
installment?
I think they filmed 7 and 8 together. Yeah, or they were going to, and then they didn't. I don't remember now.
Well, no, they were going to, and then
because of the pandemic, they didn't.
And then he had the famous, he was yelling at the crew about being safe and COVID and social distancing, and became a legend in and of itself. He just turned in his Golden Globes because he's like, screw you guys, you're not inclusive. Like, Tom Cruise is extreme in every aspect of the word, and I freaking love him for it. You can love him or hate him. He's an extreme human being, and I think in all the most awesome ways. But he just was on Entertainment Weekly or one of those magazines talking about his most dangerous stunt yet. And did you read about it?
I didn't. I've been trying to like not read about the movie, but you can tell me.
I'm going to tell you. I'm going to spoil.
Yeah, I'm cool.
But he's trying to tell you why. But basically, he rides a motorcycle, but an off-road dirt bike, basically. And some sort of chase sequence, obviously, or needs to do something Mission Impossible-esque. And he actually rides the motorcycle off a cliff and then has to pull a parachute. So he's basically spot jumping off of a dirt bike that he just drove off of a cliff at like 35, 40 miles per hour. And so the problem was, is that to do something like that, it adds a certain complexity, because if you don't release the dirt bike at a certain point and then pull the parachute at a certain point, you risk getting the parachute tangled in the bike. You risk injuring yourself mid jump and not being able to pull the chute. And for those of you that don't really know, there's no safety measures when you're spot jumping, when you're just jumping and pulling a chute. There's no such thing as like an auto deploying chute or anything like that. I mean, you've got to pull it. You got to be conscious. You got to be able to do this. So this dude takes a dirt bike, launches it off a cliff, pulls a chute, and all on a single take has to make this work for the movie. And anything, any wind change, any type of miscalculation in taking the angle of the bike off of the cliff, Tom Cruise would be dead. And they filmed it. He's obviously alive because he's being interviewed about it, and that's going to be on camera. And this is like, just take all of my money now. I don't want to wait another day to see it. Okay.
It's just so funny. That is such a badass scene that you're like, going back to what we're saying, the average person would just think is fake.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy even learns how to fly different, you know, aircrafts just because he wants to be in it. I mean, most people, I mean, I'm a huge Star Wars fan, as everyone knows. When they're flying the X-Wings, that thing is just not even a full ship. It's just sitting there in a room and people are in it and they're just moving around like this. That's what most actors would do. And he's like, no, I'm actually going to fly this thing. It's I can talk about it all day. It's incredible.
Yeah. It's like, well, case in point, in the next month, we're going to have the 9th installment of the Fast and Furious franchise.
Perfect example.
Vin Diesel didn't even have his license for most of his time as Dom Toretto. Everyone looks up to this world-class driver guy, doesn't even know how to drive. He sits in a half-built car in a green screen behind him, and he's doing this, and he's, you know, he doesn't know if he's turning right, left. He's doing nothing himself. The last time they ever did a stunt on their own in that franchise was probably Tokyo Drift. Yeah, so you've got these big, mega, multi-billion dollar franchises like Fast and Furious where nobody does their own stunts and it's just absolutely absurd. Or you can go watch a Tom Cruise movie where he's actually flying a fighter jet. He's actually jumping a dirt bike off a cliff and pulling a parachute. He's actually scaling the side of the what is it called, the Burj Khalifa, or what's the name of that
that building?
Yeah. Or the Taj Mahal. That's not the Taj Mahal.
It's not the Taj Mahal, but I can't think of the name of the building.
I mean, Tom Cruise, biggest badass ever. I will forever be a fan. And honestly, I'm a big motocross guy and a motorcycle guy. So to, you know, all the motorcycle scenes in Mission Impossible he's done, there's a lot of motorcycle scenes in the whole franchise. And they're always exhilarating to watch because you could see that there's like no stunt double. It's Tom Cruise. Couldn't be more pumped for that. And couldn't be more pumped for Top Gun to finally come out. So, but I'm not getting off Tom Cruise just yet because you and I were talking about the rumors and the kind of rehashing. For those that don't know, Tom Cruise was originally in consideration for the role of Tony Stark in Iron Man. Now there's rumors that, hey, maybe they'll bring him back. Maybe in the multiverse, he can be an alternate reality version of Tony Stark. I saw a rendering online, some sort of artist digitally implanted Tom Cruise's face over Robert Downey Jr.'s, and it was like super cool. What do you think about that rumor? And do you think that Tom Cruise could come close to what Robert Downey Jr. was able to do with the role?
So I think the rumor's amazing. And I, at this point, like, I know we've talked about this. I think it's fact. I don't think it's a rumor, but there's no way Marvel Studios, Disney are ever going to actually publicize, make a press release that someone like Tom Cruise is going to be in this movie. He is not the only major celebrity who is, my opinion, is going to make an appearance. They are going to be cameos of sort. I don't think he's ultimately going to become a new Tony Stark. What's going to happen is there's a reason the title of this movie is called Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. Madness being the key word. This movie is going to be bonkers. It is going to be the craziest movie that they've ever made. To some people, it's going to make absolutely no sense. I can guarantee Hugh Jackman is going to be in this movie. He's going to come back as Wolverine. There's been rumors, and once again, I think are fact, John Krasinski is going to be in this movie and he's going to be Captain America. He was up for the part and lost out to Chris Evans. His wife, Emily Blunt, is also going to be in this movie and she's going to play a version of Black Widow. She actually was the first choice to be Black Widow and she ultimately couldn't have the role. Do you want to say something?
She's been talking smack about comic movies like Martin Scorsese.
She has, but I think she's...
I'll forgive you for that, Disney. You talk bad about Disney, it's like talking bad about the Clintons. You end up dead.
Yeah, well, she actually, though, is Disney royalty. I mean, she's in the new Jungle Cruise movie. She was Mary Poppins. I think she's saying it a little bit because, one, there's two reasons. One, she's either lying and is trying to like not make the rumors seem true that she is going to play Sue Storm.
Yeah.
I read it. I watch a lot of these interviews. I've watched them all. And she was on Howard Stern, where most people can be really themselves. I get the vibe she's actually not going to be in it. But I think coming back, as I was saying before, to play Black Widow in Doctor Strange, she gets to kind of fulfill something that I know would have been an amazing opportunity, which she regrets. But funny story, she told Howard Stern, which I never knew it to this extent. So she couldn't be Black Widow because what all people thought up until recently was because of scheduling conflicts. She had to be in Gulliver's Travels, the remake movie, which is trash. And she told Howard Stern that she wanted to set the rumor straight, that is why she couldn't be in Iron Man 2 and ultimately become Black Widow, is she was obligated to be in that movie when she signed a contract to be in Devil Wears Prada. They told her, hey, you're going to be in this movie, but then you have to be in another movie that we produce. And that happened to be the movie. She hates the movie. She said she is royally pissed. She's never done a deal like that again. She's very selective in what she does. I'm a big Emily Blunt fan, and I will tell you, that's like the worst movie she's ever made. Obviously, she's very famous in her own right. Being in the MCU would have taken it probably to another level. But with that being said, I do think she'll make that appearance in this movie, which then ultimately probably could be why her and John, her husband, who were the fan favorites to be Mr. and Mrs. Fantastic, just won't be, because that will probably really confuse people. Even heard their Joaquin Phoenix, who he was supposed to be Doctor Strange before Benedict Cumberbatch, he is going to be in this movie. I think actors want to work with Sam Raimi. I believe these all to be true, and I think there's going to be even more surprises. Once again, it may just be like a scene. It's not going to be a big commitment for them. They get to do it. It's a nod to the huge fans who follow everything, and I think it's going to be awesome. I don't think, as much as I love Tom Cruise, I think it was a blessing in disguise that it went to Robert Downey Jr. I love that it restarted his career. I mean, that guy was in a really dark place. That role legitimately saved his life. John Favreau saved his life. And he, to me, is perfect casting. He's Tony Stark. Everyone will just always, even if you're a comic book fan and you're reading the comics, in my opinion, I just like see him. Sorry, I know I just went on a long tangent because I'm really excited for that. And I mean, that movie to me, I know I said it last time, I'm pumped about the Marvel slate that's coming out in phase 4.
Yeah. And I'm pumped for Tom Cruise to be like, all right, listen, we're actually going to build an Iron Man suit and I'm going to fly it. And you guys are going to record it. I don't want any of this green screen or I ain't doing it. And we're going to see some, but hey, Disney just created a real life lightsaber. And we haven't had the opportunity to freaking talk about that on this podcast, about how Rey comes out and stuff.
Yeah.
Freaking real lightsaber. You tell me they're not in the process of building a real Iron Man suit for Tom Cruise. You're a liar if you think that's not happening.
I mean, it's funny you say that, though. So for those of you who don't know, Avengers Land, or it's called Avengers Campus, is opening up in Disneyland, actually. I think the opening date is June 3rd. They have developed a robotic that is unlike anything that's ever been used in at least an experience before. And it is going to be Spider-Man, where he legitimately is going to be flying over the park. And there's no one in it. It's a straight up robot. It looks amazing. If you haven't seen it, you should look that up online and watch it. It's pretty cool.
Is it? So it's legit?
It's legit. It may be hard to find online the finished product, but they've shown what, you know, obviously it looks like inside under before they make it look like Spider-Man, and it is legit. It flies over the land and it's amazing.
Is this the one that, it came out like a month ago? You're gonna watch my live reaction right now. I'm gonna watch this.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
How is that possible?
People over at Disney, man, they know what's up.
But where does he go?
From what I've seen, because for people who know me, I'm very much a huge Disney fan. I'm really into the parks. I read and watch all that stuff. I think that he's going to just be going, landing on a platform, and then it's kind of like just going back and forth. So it's computer programmed to just know, like, it's going to be launched, and from some sort of, the guest is not going to see it. There's something behind the scenes that's going to launch it, and then it's just going to go on and repeat.
We are in the golden age of nerdism, dude. This is cool. We're going to have lightsabers. We're going to have Spider-Man robots flying around. Next thing, Tom Cruise is going to be flying around in an Iron Man costume.
Yeah. They actually just announced today, too, which is kind of cool for the park. So the big ride that's opening is a Spider-Man ride. And you are going to help him save whatever the adventure is. I mean, they haven't like let that out yet, but you're going to be shooting webs. And in typical Disney fashion, which I'm a sucker for, they're coming out with all different merchandise. You don't need to buy them, but if you do, it'll enhance the ride. So they're making all different web shooters, some that are developed by Tony Stark, some that are different technology. So if you wear them on the ride, you'll have a different experience, which is pretty cool. No one's ever really done that before. I mean, they're integrating merchandise like that then into a ride. So it just enhances the experience and they get to make more money.
Well, yeah. And you think about it. So you're like, okay, well, they're already starting to do that stuff. And then you just think about, they've always been at the kind of forefront of the in-park experience. I mean, think about was it Disney World or Disneyland when they brought in the Toy Story ride where you have the laser gun and you're shooting?
Yeah, that's in Disney World and Disneyland actually, but they've always been the forefront. I mean, I don't care what anyone says. I know some people like Disney's for kids. It's not. There's plenty of rides for adults, but this experience, they're top notch. I don't think any other company, I don't need to name any names, but no other theme park comes close to Disney's parks, in my opinion. Yeah. They just don't. They know how to tell a story. It's an experience. It's not just the moment you enter that queue, you're in the ride, whether you know it or not, and you're in it till the end, and they're always upping their game. I mean, I haven't gotten to go on the ride yet. I've been to Galaxy's Edge, but legitimately 2 days after I left, they opened like the premiere Ride of the Lamb, which is Rise of the Resistance, and it's supposedly the greatest theme park ride ever made. I've gone so long without reading spoilers. I should have gone to, I've canceled now like two or three trips to Disney, which sucks. But I'm going in October and I will be going on this ride, and I've heard it's amazing.
Well, you're going to Disneyland or Disney World?
I'm going to Disney World.
I'm coming, and we're going to host a podcast.
Okay, in Galaxy's Edge.
Yeah, it's a short trip for me. I'm going to just meet you down there, and we're going to have a podcast. We're going to interview whoever the heck we can find. And
your favorite, Kylo Ren. He'll be walking around.
speaking of Star Wars, let's talk Bad Batch in batches. There's four episodes in now, right?
There's been three.
Episode four comes out
this week. Yeah, the first one was like an extra supersized episode. I mean, it was essentially a movie. I can just give a quick rundown just of the show in general for people who don't know. I don't want to go into detail for every episode because I know Matt hasn't been able to really watch it yet. But it's essentially
Order 66. Watched the first.
I know you did, but it's not for everyone. I know, you know, some people, I'm someone who consumes all of Star Wars. Some people only like the movies. Some people like, you know, just the live action. I'm a huge fan of this because I Dave Filoni's the creator. What?
You call me a fake Star Wars fan?
I'm not calling you a fake Star Wars fan. No, you are. You're a real fan. The one thing I do think, though, that they're doing now is, you know, everything's going to be enjoyable regardless, but they're definitely following what you talked about before, whether it's animation or live action or movies, they're going more to the Marvel route where everything's connected. I think there's things that are going to happen in the Bad Batch that will, you know, tie into Mandalorian, tie into the sequel trilogy. It's already tying into the prequels because essentially, for those who don't know, the Bad Batch is basically season 8 of the Clone Wars. They're just following new characters that were introduced in arc in the last season of the Clone Wars, and it picks up right during Execute Order 66, so in Revenge of the Sith, and you're seeing it from the perspective of, they're called Clone Force 99, aka the Bad Batch. They're like an elite group of clone troopers who all had like different genetic mutations that didn't make them the perfect clone. So they kind of all have heightened abilities. You know, one of them is, you know, a sharpshooter, the leader hunter, you know, he can track people really well. One of them is super strong. One of them is really smart. It's kind of like an A-team of sort. I mean, the main character is essentially Rambo. Like, you can tell Dave Filoni was like, hey, I like Rambo, I'm making this clone just like him. It's like a throwback. And they're going to have, you know, go off on side missions and whatnot, but they're really learning more about the clones. And the beginning of the show is essentially showing the creation of the Empire. In the latest episode, I mean, you're going to finally start to see, I mean, they've explained this in, you know, other forms of media, but not necessarily what's in canon now, how the Empire starts having stormtroopers, where people are choosing to be part. That was the main subject of the last episode. You can see what one of the admirals for the Empire is kind of telling Tarkin that, hey, I know you think that you can control these clones. The Bad Batch is a perfect example that we may not be able to do it as well as we thought. That's another thing. A lot, some of them's inhibitor chips in these, in the Bad Batch, whether because of their mutations or whatnot, when they did execute Order 66, it didn't affect them. So that was kind of like a red flag for the Empire. And they're starting to recruit, you know, people who want to work for them because they want to, you know, they believe in the cause of the Empire. And they're kind of explaining how that actually, someone's will to want to do something can be much stronger than just having someone do something because they're a puppet. And I thought that was pretty interesting. And I really liked that. And we're going to continuously go on and see how the Empire is created. So seeing the true stormtroopers that we know in the original trilogy. Another cool thing is there's character's name is Omega. She is a young clone, you find out. They haven't necessarily said this yet, but it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure it out. I mean, she's definitely a female version of Jango Fett. She definitely was created for a purpose. I think that she is going to somewhat tie in to what they did with the sequel trilogy, with Palpatine, and also the cloning that is going on in The Mandalorian. But she has since left Kamino and has joined the Bad Batch. And Hunter, who's the leader, they're definitely going with they saw how well the relationship between Din Djarin, aka the Mandalorian, and Grogu and Baby Yoda worked. I feel like they're going with a similar like father-daughter type relationship here, which I like where it's going. And then another big part of the show in the pilot episode, one of the members of the Bad Batch, he actually turns on them at the end. I think his chip kind of is worked a little bit. He doesn't really know what's going on, but he is definitely like, I'm fighting for the empire. He doesn't like that, you know, the members of his team weren't really following orders. And so he is now leading the group of the new stormtroopers that's being created, which is pretty cool.
And so you think that some of the stuff that's connected here is going to somehow connect to Mandalorian, because they are exploring all, they have already intersected with some of the Clone Wars episodes and some of the stuff there, right? So
yeah,
so you think they'll further that?
I think they're further gonna connect them, and also Finnick Shan is gonna be in the show. She hasn't been in it yet, but she was one of the bounty hunters in, she was actually in both seasons of The Mandalorian. We last see her, Boba Fett saved her, and she was kind of like his right-hand person. And she's now going to be in the book of Boba Fett. She is still with him, but I know we're going to be first introduced to her in this show, which means in the timeline of what we know in Star Wars right now, it's going to be the first time we would technically see her, which is, I think, pretty cool too. So that once again goes, hey, you'll still enjoy The Mandalorian, but if you're a huge Star Wars fan, you're going to get to see these characters do other stuff.
Have you heard the rumor that Mandalorian might feature a really large time jump?
Yeah, and I think that's 100% happening. I think that's because there's a lot of things going on there, but I think that's mostly going to be because of how it ended. There's no way they're having that show without Grogu, Baby Yoda. It's just, he's the star of that show. He's what makes it the global phenomenon that it is. And the fact that he ends leaving, you know, Din Djarin fulfilled his mission by getting him back to his people, aka the Jedi. So I think that's why there's going to be a time jump. And I also think that's why kind of Book of Boba Fett's coming out next. There's also rumors that there, you know, some issues behind the scenes with Pedro Pascal. They're never going to admit that publicly, but he kind of, I don't want to believe it because I really like him and that is my favorite show, but that he is basically pissed that you never see his face. And the average person has no idea that he is playing one of the most famous people in the world as an actor. I get it. I mean, legitimately every other person he acts along in that show, that even our Mandalorians are taking their helmets off. I think they found a way to write in the show that's probably not going to be an issue anymore. I think we'll see more of his face, but as a guy who makes millions of dollars to play pretend, which I wish I could do, I think it's a little ridiculous. He signed up knowing that that was going to be the role. And I don't know why maybe because it became so huge, but I feel like signing on to the show, he should have known it. But some people do think that show is a huge risk because it was the first live action Star Wars show. But he knew that that was in the cards. I mean, the whole premise of the first season is this guy's never taking his helmet off.
I have zero sympathy for a guy that gets to play in Star Wars universe, make a lot of money, be a paid actor in a time where being a paid actor is very difficult. That's sad. I hope that's not true. But if it is,
I hope it's not true. From what I've heard from, you know, a lot of, you know, rumors that I read or reliable sources that I, you know, listen to, it's been worked out and it's all good. But the fact that he even had that issue, I think caused production to be halted. I think Book of Boba Fett was coming out no matter what, but that is coming out when The Mandalorian would have come out. So it's technically like kind of like season three of The Mandalorian. And supposedly I've heard Mando season three isn't going to come back until like around this time next year, like April. Maybe it'll be the May the 4th, like big launch, like the Bad Batch was this year.
Seems weird. He can be replaced.
Supposedly, if you believe this to be true, And I've never heard anyone say that Jon Favreau isn't like the nicest man on the planet. He basically said that to him. He's like, dude, I can replace you whenever the hell I want. If you're going to be like, supposedly he was a huge drama queen and like stormed off set.
Okay.
Like, and exactly what you just said. He was like, one, we can replace you, or two, I mean, Boba Fett could become the new star of the show. Like, I mean,
that's what everyone was hoping anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I like the character now of Din Djarin. He's become one of my favorite Star Wars characters. But when you look at seasons one and two, that is a complete story, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You don't need him anymore. I mean, there's tons of story left to tell, but if you want to look at the story of him and Grogu, it's fulfilled in a very satisfying way.
Yeah, like, hey, Pedro, that way, this is the way for us. That's the way for you. This is the way.
I do think he's made a pretty iconic character, though. And like that, if you know him, you know that's his voice. But that's, once again, going to like, we're movie nerds. The average person would had no idea. Like, I was a fan of his. I was kind of excited when I found out he was cast. And then another thing that kind of led into these rumors was he's now the star of the new Last of Us video game adaptation on HBO Max. And people were kind of like, how did he just sign like a first look deal with them to make that show if he's a star of like the biggest show in the world at that time? Yeah. It's weird.
Plus, that's really bad casting, by the way. I like him, but they missed an opportunity of casting Hugh Jackman in that role. I'm sure he doesn't want to do TV, but I don't like that casting for The Last of Us.
Yeah, I'm indifferent. I mean, it's going to be a bit. Yeah, I'm indifferent. I don't think it's bad casting, but I mean, I can see why you'd want Hugh Jackman, but I also think, I don't know, there's just something. I'm a huge Hugh Jackman guy too. I don't want to say he's beneath that type of stuff now. I just think he's now picking roles that like he thinks, nothing against the Last of Us, but he's looking for more intimate type roles to show off his skills that I don't think he really got that big of a chance to do a lot in his career. He was pretty much typecasted, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And when people find, I mean, it's no secret anymore, but the guy is like a living legend on Broadway. I mean, when people see him do stuff like that and they're like, wait, that's the guy who played Wolverine? He's a very talented man.
Yes, agreed. He's 100%. He's one would call a thespian.
I mean, yes.
he's extremely talented. He's got an incredible voice, got incredible talents across the spectrum. Shouldn't be typecast. I mean, if you wanna really look at, have a weekend of movies with Hugh Jackman. Watch these few movies and you'll see the range that this guy has, right? Watch Logan, which is the best installment of the X-Men franchise. Which,
speaking of Logan, we didn't talk about this even on our own time. Do you see that the villain from Logan is in the new, he got cast in the new Indiana Jones?
Yes.
Same director, so he clearly likes working with him, but I thought that was exciting.
Yes, I did see that. That Indiana Jones film is coming together at the casting has been pretty stellar so far. I'm a huge Casino Royale guy, so Mads Mikkelsen getting cast was huge for me. Did I say that right?
Yeah, you did. I mean, he's a genre actor. He's legitimately been in every major franchise. He's in Star Wars. He's in Marvel. He's in Harry Potter. He's in James Bond. I mean, the list goes on and on. If anyone had to replace Johnny Depp, like, I'm happy it was him.
Yeah, talented guy. So yeah, to me, that movie, we need to do a full Indiana Jones rundown one day and do that franchise, including maybe some of the young Indiana Jones Chronicles. I'm not sure if you watched those.
I did. But, yeah.
Casting there is stellar, to put it lightly. I was going somewhere.
We were. And I'm trying to.
I lost track because I got so excited on Indiana Jones, which is like the best.
We were talking about Hugh Jackman movies.
Oh, yes. Hugh Jackman. We need to, because Hugh Jackman is like a nerd favorite, right? So if you watch Logan, then watch Les Miserables, then watch Prisoners, which is one of the most underrated movies. Yeah, that's one of the most underrated movies of all time. It got absolutely snubbed in award season that year. Both Jake Gyllenhaal, actually that whole cast. You got Jake Gyllenhaal, you have Paul Dano, who we need to talk about next.
Yes.
Perfect segue. And Hugh Jackman, Jake Gyllenhaal, Paul Dano. The performances out of those three, and Terrence Howard as well, another guy in the Nerdverse who played the original Colonel Rhodes, incredible flick. And Hugh Jackman gives off these, I mean, he does a better Christian Bale Batman than Christian Bale. All right. Like, show me where my daughter is. Like, just where's Rachel? Absolutely incredible flick. Watch it. And tell me that Hugh Jackman is one of the most talented human beings alive. You can also watch the other musical he did with Zac Efron and Zendaya, who also
The Greatest Showman.
Greatest Showman. But since I mentioned Paul Dano,
let's talk about it.
We need to talk about, they released or didn't release, it got leaked, some of the promo stills for the upcoming The Batman, starring Arbats, aka Robert Pattinson, and Paul Dano as the Riddler, and Colin Farrell as the Penguin, and Zoe Kravitz as Selina Kyle. And all the stills look pretty badass, in terms of they're definitely setting up for a long Halloween story for you comic book fans. Something dark. To me, it feels like a Christopher Nolan movie, but in a horror type environment, it feels like everything's really, really dark, really scary, creepy, and it seems to be a murder mystery, which I absolutely love because we're going to get to the detective side of Batman. And anyone that watched that small preview they did where Robert Pattinson proved that he can play Batman really well, where he just goes, I'm vengeance, after beating the guy's face into a bloody pulp, probably smash his skull.
It's so unfortunate with everything that's obviously, I mean, it's not, we have much bigger problems in our world right now, but the fact of the pandemic, that trailer, when that came out, I feel like fans, myself included, were on such a high for that movie. And yeah. Like, I feel like that was so long ago. Yeah. And it almost makes you like forget about the movie. And then with all the garbage that's going on with DC, and, you know, we were hyped for the Snyder Cut, and it's just like, I feel like I hope this movie's amazing, but it's getting lost in the shuffle. The only thing it has going for it is that it is a Batman movie, which is their premium character.
Yeah. They need to. And that's the thing. When you go that hard into paint early on into your promotion, you better be bringing the noise for the second iteration of this like marketing blast. And if they don't up that, it's going to be hard to up that, because that was a damn near perfect trailer.
It was.
And they only filmed like 30% of the film at that point. So you can only really go down from there, which scares the living shit out of me. And I know what you're going to say, which is, you actually, based on the latest view of the Riddler, you think they are going down a little bit. Why don't you share your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because the Riddler was in the trailer. I mean, if you didn't know it was Paul Dano, you may not have realized that too. He was playing, and like, yeah, his costume, in my opinion, wasn't what I would have wanted, because I mean, I know this movie's grounded in reality, but I would have wished it was a little more comic booky. I mean, the entire Christopher Nolan Dark Knight trilogy is exactly that, grounded in reality, but the Joker was still the Joker, in my opinion. Paul Dano's the Riddler, I mean, first off, he is one of the greatest actors working, in my opinion. I mean, he's underrated if you're not into like artsy type films. He's not mainstream, even though he should be. This is going to put him at a new level for people who just don't really know him. And first off, you're like covering his face in this weird ass leather mask that basically looks like he's working in a sex dungeon. In my opinion, I don't like it. But now that for people who don't know, the image that was leaked was coming off of like a calendar, like a pretty, yeah, Matt's showing it right now, like a promotional calendar with like promotional images. So this may not be the best look. People could be freaking out for no reason. I'm just like not a fan of it. I just think it looks weird.
Yeah. Honestly, it's not a high definition promo. It was leaked and it's like a picture of a picture, I think. And I'm going to give it the benefit of the doubt, because that again, that trailer made it seem epic. They also leaked some footage in a Catwoman appreciation compilation video, where they looked at all the iterations of Catwoman, and they actually included Zoe Kravitz, and they had Matt Reeves giving some feedback, and they showed some clips. I'm not sure if you saw that.
I did. It's funny. It's interesting. This doesn't make me feel like the movie's going to be worse. It's just not the costume that I was hoping for. Maybe it'll change throughout the movie. I just kind of like, even the pictures of Zoe Kravitz have leaked as well, and she's very much in like a homemade type look, which I'm fine with, but it just, I feel like you could have the Riddler have maybe a little bit of a different costume if it's grounded in reality, because at the end of the day, I mean, Batman has a full-fledged suit. Like, I don't know. But once again, I may see it when it's in the trailer again, or like the official poster, and I won't care as much.
Yeah, well, I get it. I know what you're looking for. And so for those of you that don't know what Charlie's looking for, I showed you what Paul Dano looked like. I'm going to try to share this. Oh, there it is. That's what
Paul looked like. No, stop. It's funny. No. I hate that costume. I'm looking for more of him wearing like a green like suit. Like, legitimately, he could almost be wearing the costume that Heath Ledger wears as the Joker, but more with the Riddler look, just something like that. Or I know you had brought up when we were talking before about, you know, how the Riddler looked in the Arkham Knight games.
Yeah.
He doesn't look like this. From what I remember, he had like the goggles, which I like, but he wasn't wearing this like leather mask by any means. He looked like a normal dude. He had like, I think, like just like a button down shirt.
Yeah, he had
that had like that the open, it still had the right, yeah, and it had the Riddler like question marks. Like, you could do that tastefully without it looking like comic booky tacky, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, what I think they're going with here, so the more research I do, this is like not an origin story for Batman, but an origin, it's like in the early years of Batman, but an origin story for most of the supervillains, including Selina Kyle, where they say it's pre-Catwoman. It's just Selina Kyle is a vigilante that's fighting for the little guy. And the misrepresented, underrepresented groups of people in Gotham City. And it's Penguin before he's really the Penguin. He's just a gangster in the Falcone crime family.
And Colin Farrell looks incredible, though, as the Penguin. I mean, call night and day, from my opinion, of seeing Paul Dano as the Riddler. I mean, he, you don't even think it's, you don't even like know it's him. I mean, and he gained the weight for this role. I mean, there's prosthetics as well, but he, like, for a comic book movie, maybe, you know, DC is the movies that get, you know, actors recognition for their acting, because he looks amazing, and I think he's going to crush that role.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm still optimistic for it. I love, yeah, we talk about this all the time. I love movies that are somewhat grounded in reality. The trailer seemed to give off that eerie kind of detective comics vibe. I'm excited, but we'll see. Well, you know, the jury's out. I was really excited for the Bond flick, and then it fizzled out because it's just like, release the damn movie.
What did Rami tell you about it?
What's that?
What did Rami tell you about it when you were with him in Miami?
Rami, I had an incredible trip to South Beach, Miami, and met every single celebrity under the face of the earth. It was wild. They were all in freaking Miami this weekend, and it was either Rami Malek or his twin. which, funny story. So Rami Malek has a twin, and they're identical. I mean, you see the two of them side by side on the red carpet when they've actually attended together, and it's like, whoa, spitting image. If you haven't, Google it. He does have a twin brother. And I was in LA one time, and I see Rami Malek in my eyes, and I'm like, hey, love Need for Speed. Huge fan of Mr. Robot. and the guy just was looking at me like, cool. Like, you know, and then I was like, can I get a picture with you? And he's like, yeah, sure. You know, and he like goes to pose. And then his girlfriend's like, would you leave him alone? He's sick of, like, she says something like, he's sick of living in his brother's shadow. I was like, what? She's like, it's twin brother, you jerk. It wasn't even Rami Malek. And so that was in LA. And then I feel like that might have happened again in Miami, and it was probably.
It's funny. I've actually met Rami Malek at work. He's really nice, very humble. However, I do feel like his success is getting to him a little bit, because I don't know if you had heard the story. It happened a few weeks ago, maybe months now, but how he went to school with Rachel Bilson, and she posted a picture of them when they were younger, and he like flipped the shit on her and was like, you need to pull that picture like right now. I thought that was just a little, like, she was like basically torn up about it. She was like so happy to like have reconnected with him, because he DM'd her and thought he was gonna say like, oh my god, how have you been? And it was kind of like, take that picture of me down right now. She did it, and then like he didn't talk to her. That's not cool, in my opinion. I get it, people want privacy, and you know, maybe he doesn't want people to see what he looked like then, but it's just, that really upset me, because I really like him and he's extremely talented. I think he's going to slay it as the whoever villain he's playing in the Bond movie. I'm the most excited to see him in that movie.
Yeah. So, funny connection here. So I'm going to shout out another podcast.
I was waiting for that. That's kind of why I said it.
They're doing a rewatch of the OC, and it's Rachel Bilson and Melinda Clark, who play Summer Roberts and Julie Cooper in the OC, which Charlie and I are both huge fans of. That was a show that kind of actually made it cool to be a nerd in high school and to like comic books and like, you know, certain less popular music. It made anyway, we won't get into the music side, but that podcast, interestingly enough, so Melinda Clark was also on Entourage, and so I mentioned Victory, the podcast, earlier, and so I noticed that they're doing like throwback videos on the Entourage page of like her. Melinda Clark was on Entourage and she was dancing and did this like funny move, so they were just like making fun of it or whatever. And so I commented on it and was like, you guys need to get Melinda Clark on the Victory podcast, and then Doug Ellen, who created Entourage, you need to get on the OC podcast as a fan, because he had already mentioned me in a comment on Instagram and was like, I'm a big fan of the OC. And I just rewatched season one, and I had said, a fun fact, Sloane from Entourage is on the OC season two. And he's like, oh my God, I didn't realize that. I'm watching season two this weekend. I'll get back to you. And I was like, well, make sure you bring Melinda Clark on there. And Melinda Clark was on the podcast last week. I haven't listened to the latest one yet, but I'm pretty sure they're going to mention my Instagram handle, because I sent the connection. I put them together. It was
my suggestion. They should.
My suggestion, and it was my comment that they replied.
You got to get then stuff. That should get them to come over on Nerds Be Heard. I mean, we're giving them pretty publicity right now.
Absolutely. We are cutting the clip when I promote Victory the podcast and say Victory, and we are putting that on their page. And yeah, I'm gonna bring Doug Ellen on. We're gonna talk about how he brought comic book fold into the Entourage world, and maybe we'll even bring if we can bring Rachel Bilson onto the Nerds Be Heard podcast. Charlie, do you understand what the inner Seth Cohen would just explode? Yeah, well,
you know who she used to be with, right? Who her the father of her kid is. Do you know that, right?
What do you mean, Anakin Skywalker?
Okay, correct. I mean, I knew you knew, but I mean, come on, that's totally full circle. I mean, maybe we get Rachel on, and then, you know, she brings over Hayden Christensen, and then, you know, we'd be the number one podcast in the world.
All right, everybody, listen, this is our business plan. You are our listeners. We're bringing you along for the ride, okay? We are bringing these people on the podcast. We're going to get Anakin Skywalker. I am all about wish fulfillment. I am all about putting out energy into the universe. And whether it puts the podcast on the map or not, having Hayden Christensen on this podcast to talk about all things prequels, to talk about things in the Obi-Wan Kenobi universe, I'm all for it. I'll also bring up all his other movies, because they're all great. Jumper, kind of a comic booky movie as well. Actually, great flick. If you guys like kind of corny action flicks, almost a teen flick, but really freaking cool. I remember watching that and thinking that was an awesome movie. Let's put that in our universe. Let's get that out there.
We should. I mean, I would love. I'm a huge Hayden Christensen fan. I never had. We've talked about the prequels on our May the 4th episode, but we grew up on them. We loved them. I'm so pumped to see him come back in Star Wars. And he's probably one of them. I've met a few of the actors in the Star Wars universe from going to various events and whatnot. I would love to meet him or talk to him, because there's a certain sense going back before how you said you can't really feel bad for an actor getting to, you know, get paid tons of money to have the coolest job ever. But he really did get the ringer from that movie, and it definitely messed with him, because people hated his guts from his portrayal. Which sucks.
It's coming back around.
It's come full circle. And that's what's going to make, like, it's funny. As much as I love watching stuff at home, nothing beats the movie theater. And like, obviously the future is more these types of streaming shows, but getting to probably, if you were in a movie theater opening night, if Obi-Wan series was in a movie theater, seeing him come back on screen for the first time, people are going to go nuts. That's going to be like Endgame type moment. And it's going to feel like, I would love to be with him to see the fans see it, because that's going to be his, like, that's his victory. Like, his, you know, people are going to love it. And so that there's art fans out there who think he's awesome.
Yeah. And in that series, I think they're going to do flashbacks too, to the Clone War period.
100%.
Yeah. And it's going to be, and it's like you said, it's all going to connect with all these shows now. And I think they're on the right path. I'm starting to see the light. With what they can do with the Star Wars universe. So it gets me really excited. And again, we're going to bring them. I'm getting them on this podcast. You underestimate my power. Okay. I have the high ground. we're going to get them on here, and we're going to talk about it. And then we're going to, you know what? We're going to do a special screening. That way he can see how much the fans love. We love you, Anakin Skywalker. We believe in you. We believe you're the chosen one, okay? You were the chosen one for the Nerds Be Heard podcast. We're bringing you on. Can someone help us get that viral, my little rant, all right? I almost popped a blood vessel behind my eye because I'm so passionate.
It was a great rant, and you definitely threw in some amazing Anakin Skywalker quotes.
You know, my eye hurts so much. It's almost like I got sand in it. I hate sand. It's so coarse. And
Man, that's definitely one of the worst parts of the prequels, but...
Oh, good times. All right, well, that might be a good launching point for us to send off into wait for the next episode.
This is a good episode. Just, you know, geeking out per usual. Make sure you guys follow us on Instagram at Nerds Be Heard Podcast, and also at Twitter on Nerds Be Heard.
And somebody give a round of applause. I'm going to do it. Charlie, you need to duck because we need to see this amazing new logo that Charlie created. Look at that. It's got everybody. It's got Darth Vader. It's got the Joker. It's got the Punisher. It's got Batman. It's got Iron Man. It's got Grogu. It's got Superman. It's got Spider-Man. It's got, I'm not going to say Kylo Ren. I just said Kylo Ren. I can't believe you put him on there. Wonder Woman, Groot. It's got everything on there. It's got a freaking Darth Maul lightsaber. That's the coolest logo. Many props to Charlie and his creative talents for
putting that together. Thank you.
And yeah, so we're excited. We're still at this. We're coming at you every single week. We are the Nerds Be Heard signing off. Thank you, Charlie, for another good session.
Thank you, Matt. Until next time, may the Force be with you.
Always.